I'm speaking with Chrissy Swain. Chrissy is a member of the Grassy Narrows community in Northwestern Ontario. She has been walking from Northwestern Ontario towards Ottawa the past few weeks as part of the second walk for Mother Earth that she has undertaken. Chrissy, welcome to No One's Legal Radio.
Hi.
Chrissy, you're speaking with us right now in Charbert Lake Algonquin community, which is east of Toronto. Could you just tell us what you've been up to the last few days? You've been on the road, and you've been on the road in a sort of unique way. Tell us about the walk that you've been undertaking the last few weeks.
Well, we started walking on September 3rd, and we've been hitting like communities along the way, and we're carrying Treaty Number 3 with us. And I guess the message that we're carrying is, you know, kind of reminding like people that we have treaties in Canada, and that, you know, even reminding our own people that we have, that they still have those rights and that they exist, that they haven't gone away. And then, you know, taking that message to Ottawa, to Parliament Hill, you know, and reminding Canada also that we have those treaties and they need to be acknowledged. And I guess, you know, like where the reason why it's our treaty is because, you know, people are getting criminalized for standing up for those rights, you know, getting thrown in jail, being charged, and, you know, it's just the stand itself, you know, standing up for the land and like all of that is a part of our treaties.
Chrissy, vast parts of Canada are covered by these numbered treaties, Treaty 9, et cetera, et cetera. And from what I understand, the area around Grassy Narrows is covered by something called Treaty 3. But what you're asserting, what other people are asserting, is that there is another treaty that is a more authentic, a more truer representation of the negotiations that led to the signing of Treaty 3, whose anniversary is coming up on October 3rd, which is just a few days away. You're going to be in Ottawa for that. So tell us more about this alternative treaty or this more authentic treaty that you are bringing with you to Ottawa.
Well, this treaty is called the Papalm Treaty, and like the story that I've heard from about it is that like back in 1873 when they were signing the treaties, that, well, I guess even 3 years before that, like our people were in negotiation of like with Treaty Number 3, like negotiating the treaty. And so what our people would do was that they would take that treaty back to the people, and then they would like go fasting with it, take it to ceremonies, and then they would bring it back to who they were negotiating with and, you know, make changes, and then they would take it back. So it took 3 years for them to sign that treaty. And I guess what our people were told was that this treaty was going to be changed, you know, so that we had to be the ones to write it the way that it was negotiated, so that our people would have like the real version of what went on. Like during the, I guess that was what was really written in the treaty, our version of it, our interpretation of it. And I guess this Papalm Treaty like surfaced like not too long back, and when the government had found out that this treaty was out there, that they wanted to pay $5,000 for it so that our people couldn't, you know, get a hold of it. But we have it, and I'm carrying like a copy of that treaty, and I like, to me, that's the real version, because then it's like it was written, you know, by our people. And yeah.
Chrissy, your walk also occurs in the context of ongoing survival struggles in the community of Grassy Narrows. Grassy Narrows has become synonymous with resistance to clear-cut logging, as well as environmental pollution and resistance to mining. So tell our listeners more about the community that you left in order to undertake this journey a few weeks ago. Tell us more about the struggles in Grassy Narrows in defense of the earth.
Well, I guess I can start by, you know, that in the 1970s, there was the, I guess they found mercury pollution in the community. And at that time, I guess there was like a stand taken, but there was like a settlement at the time. And then there, like before that, there was like the relocation of our communities. And then for like the hydro dams and stuff to go up. And I'll just state, you know, like what our stand is really about. And it's about, you know, the state, like, of our young people, the youth in my community. It's, like, our young people, you know, are losing the language. They're losing our ways of life. They're losing our culture. So, like, to me, when I look at our young people, it's like we're at a state of emergency. And then we look back at the history of what our people went through. There's, like, the residential schools. There's the mercury pollution, and there's, like, the logging, you know, just everything that happened in our people's history. That's what this stand is about. Like, it's not just environmental issues anymore. It's, like, a bigger, it's about everything now. And I feel like, you know, since 2002 when we put up the blockade, there's been a lot of changes. Like, the young people have really, like, shown, you know, that we can make change and stop things. You know, last year we did the walk from from Kenora to Toronto. And, you know, a week later we got, you know, the news that Abitibi had pulled out of the Whiskey Jack Forest. And now we're still left facing, you know, Weyerhaeuser, and that's like another big logging company. And then we have, you know, two areas like where we have spring water that are being staked for mining, for mineral mining, and it's like really close to the community. And those are the two lakes that have like the cleanest water. You know, there's no pollution in it. There's no nothing in there. You know, it's just spring water.
Chrissy, you're on the front lines of these struggles. Back in 2002, you undertook a gesture which provoked what ended up being the longest standing Indigenous blockade in Canadian history. Can you talk to us about that night in 2002 when you and others decided to cut down trees to undertake a blockade against logging in your community?
Well, I think it at the time, we had me and my sister, you know, we're kind of reflecting on our childhood. And like, for us, we grew up hunting and fishing. You know, we learned all those things. And we were talking about, you know, how... Well, we had just, like, we're kind of driving off the reserve, and the big logging truck just went by us. And at that time, we had just lost our stepfather, who was, you know, the one who taught us all those things. And you know, us having children of our own also, you know, saying, you know, holy, who's going to teach them those things? And, you know, we have to be the ones to carry that on to them now. And, you know, just seeing this logging truck go by, and we're like, then what's going to be there, you know, for us to teach them? So that was kind of like a push, you know, to what we did. And I kind of looked at my sister, and I was like, you know what? I was like, we have to do something. We got to do it. And she's like, all right. So we went home, and we dropped our kids off with my mom. And, you know, we didn't want anybody to know, so we told her that we were going out to the bush to get wood or something, and we ended up going out there at night, and I want to like mention too, you know, that we did it in a really respectful way. You know, when we found, you know, the trees that we were going to use, put to lay over the road, I used tobacco and I prayed, and I you know, I spoke to that tree and said, you know, this is, we're going to use you, you know, and, you know, in a good way, we're going to stop, you know, want to stop what's going on here. And and, you know, put that tobacco down with that for, like, respect, I guess. And that's the way we did it. And we were kind of scared because we ended up getting stuck out there at night. And I guess my mom was worried about us. She called our dad, and my dad came out and got us. And we didn't want him to go further because we were scared of, like, what we did was wrong, I guess. Not wrong, but, you know, scared to let people know that it was us. And my dad got us out of there. And then I guess he was on his way hunting, and he found the trees. And I guess he went and he talked to my auntie, Judy De Silva, and he cried, you know, to her, I guess, and said, I have to help my daughters. He said, they're desperate. He said, I feel sorry for them because they'll do anything. And I think, like, from there, you know, a couple days later, that's when things really started to happen, that, you know, everybody saw, like, how serious it was, that we already did it, and that everybody had to pull together. And that's how things started.
And Chrissy, now many years later, you're undertaking your second walk. It's a pretty extraordinary journey, walking from northwestern Ontario to southern Ontario to Ottawa. That's a 1,800-kilometer journey. Can you tell us a bit about some of your experiences on this journey? You're right now speaking from the Charbot Lake Algonquin community. Tell us about your journey so far for this walk from Mother Earth.
Well, it's been really hard, but it's been really, like really inspiring, I guess, too, because then you see how well, you know, our people, like, can pull together really quick, you know. The communities that we went to, you know, we would just drive in by chance, you know, and see somebody on the road, and then they would read the van that says walk to Ottawa, you know, and they'd, like, you know, pull together, you know, phone around, and then all of a sudden we'll have somewhere to sleep, we'll have you know, food to eat, people will fill up our gas tank, and it just, like, I guess it gives me more hope and more of a reason, you know, to keep doing what I'm doing, because I see, you know, that people really do believe in, you know, what we're doing, and that people, you know, are proud, you know, to see that young people are out there, you know, taking that stand, you know, to make sure that we have those rights still, and to, you know, make sure that things are going to be okay. And there's been a lot of, like, we've been through a lot, like, with some places we would get turned away, you know, but we would still somehow find a way, you know, to have somewhere. And in Thunder Bay, we ended up panhandling. We had, like, absolutely no food, no gas. At the Fort William First Nation, like, filled up our gas tank, and we went panhandling at the inner city mall there so that we can buy a little bit of food. And I guess we were sitting there for, like, 20 minutes. We fundraised $40, and we got chased away by the security. And it was, like, from complainers. And I was arguing with the security guy there. I was like, why do you let, you know, all these other people come here, you know, begging for money or, you know, fundraising? I was like, and here we're doing something really good, you know, we're doing it for the earth. I said, and we're being chased away. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, it's just policy and whatever. So, like, all these different things that we had to go through, you know, we even got stranded one night not knowing where we were going to sleep, and we were, again, out of gas in the middle of the night. But then, you know, we put our tobacco down, and so we've been through all kinds of different things, meeting up with different young people and kind of educating them, inspiring them, you know, to do stuff like this. And yeah, so it's been tough, but then at the same time, it's like it gives me more faith and hope.
Chrissy, when you started your journey, you made a visit to a school near Kenora, the McIntosh Residential School. Could you tell us about that visit that you made with your aunt and elder Judy Da Silva, and the dreams that you had since then, which has come to symbolize a bit some of the connections that you're making during this journey?
Well, when we went out there, we were told that we had to go check something out there. So we went out and we found we saw hydro poles in the graves of the children that were buried there, and to me it was really sad, you know. Like before, I was never really affected by, you know, residential school. I felt like it never really emotionally, I guess, affected me. It would get me mad when I'd hear stories and stuff, but when I saw this, you know, I cried, you know, and I was like, you know, this is so disrespectful, you know, this is what, you know, Canada thinks of our people. I said, you know, this is like we're nothing, and it made me feel so angry, and that I said, you know, I have to do something. I have to do something for these children. I said that the memory of them, and you know, we have to bring them home, or you know, address something. I said, because you know, this pole in this child's grave, I said, does now, I said, you know, shows, you know, that Stephen Harper's apology to the residential school survivor is nothing. I said it means nothing, and that you know, we have to be more out there, and you know, and show, you know, that we're here, and that we're like, we're the ones that survived, and that we're gonna, you know, deal with this. After that, it was like things just kind of started to happen for me, I guess. Right after that, I had a dream that I was sitting at Old Woman Bay. And in my dream, you know, these two women came out of the water, and they had like really long, black, beautiful hair, and they had slits on their face, and they're just dripping with water. So I knew that they came from the water, and they were talking to me about the importance of the water, how, you know, it's our responsibility as a Anishinaabekwek to carry that water, and that water gives life. And they pointed down the beach and they said, that woman down there is going to give you something. And in my dream, it was Laura Comwin. She came to me and gave me a piece of paper. And I looked at that paper, and that paper was alive. It looked like the water when the sun sparkles on the water. And it was changing colors. And so when I woke up, I had talked to somebody, and they told me that piece of paper that I dreamt about was called Manetum Azinabegan, and that spirit paper, and that was the name of our treaty. So they said that's what I had to carry, was that water in our treaty. So that we are carrying that water too, like from the two lakes that the mining companies staked out for their area, I guess, where they want to do the mining. But I guess too, like at the same time, you know, I wanted to bring up too, you know, that there's been a lot of stuff coming up about residential school on this trip also. You know, when we're walking down the road, you know, I think about those children, you know, that were in residential schools, and that you know, died, I guess, running away from residential schools, or that died in residential schools, or the ones that survived and made it home. And my little girl, we ended up staying at this house. Her name is Carissa. She's 8 years old. She was sitting there one night, and she was kind of spooked or something, and she says, Mom, she says, you know, this reminds me of a residential school, she says. And it kind of, like, shocked me because then, like, I was like, how does she know what it feels like, you know? And I just said, like, oh, it's okay, you know. And in the morning when she woke up, she was kind of scared. And she says, Mom, I had a dream. She said that me and Tanisha were sleeping with in a room with a bunch of little kids, she said, and all these little kids, she said, were sleeping like on beds and stuff. And she said this man dressed in black came into the room and grabbed Tanisha, she said, and I guess, you know, that man in black was taking Tanisha away, and she said that she her and the other little kids started to fight off that man and like taking Tanisha away from him. And so it kind of like really, really hit me because this was my 8-year-old daughter, you know, having those kind of dreams and like never really hearing the stories of residential school or, you know, but her like being able to see, you know, or envision what that was like. And so there's been all kinds of different things that have come up on this walk. So, you know, it's, to me now, it's not just about the earth anymore. It's about everything, the earth, you know, everybody that's on it, everything that's been done wrong to everybody, you know, that's what this is about now, and that's who we're praying for.
Chrissy, thank you for taking the time to speak on No One's Legal Radio. You're going to be in Ottawa to present the treaty on October 3rd. And you'll be here in Montreal on October 6th to talk to people directly about your walk and the struggles in Grassy Narrows. But thank you for taking the time to speak with us on No One's Legal Radio.
Miigwech.